everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John is our engineer and producer on Friday for the Buckmaster Show on this 2-month anniversary already, John, of making the show all telephonic. And of course, we're doing that to keep all of our guests safe in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio for this Friday, May 15th. You know, 2 months feels like an eternity through all of this. When it all began, I kind of started like March 17th is kind of the date I used. That was like St. Patrick's Day, when it seems like everything went south. We are live each weekday during the noon hour on 10:30, Tucson's Voice for Trusted News Talk. We have our worldwide live listening. People listen to the program all over the world. You can hear us live at buckmastershow.com. And of course, we have podcasts. We have almost a 10-year archive of pretty much every show we have done since we launched the first week of January in 2011. Our media partners, we like to say Friday is our shout-out day and thanks. These folks prominently display the Buckmaster Show logo, so folks can just click on it and then link. TucsonSentinel.com has our link. Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, which includes the Tucson Weekly, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, Democrat Dr. Randy Fries. Dr. Fries was first elected to the Arizona State Legislature to represent District 9 in 2014. Dr. Fries is the Assistant Minority Leader of the Arizona House. He's a member of the UA College of Medicine 9-member trauma team. He's a professor of surgery and the Associate Medical Director over there. Dr. Fries, one of the trauma surgeons who cared so well and so beautifully for the victims of the January 8th shootings in 2011. Joining us on our other live line is Arizona Daily columnist Tim Steller. Tim, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Doing pretty well. Having a good day. We have good days and bad days. And last couple days, you know, I've been admitting it to my listeners, Dr. Fries. We're all going through kind of this anxiety roller coaster. And I'm very quick to admit to my listeners, Dr. Fries, I've had good days and bad days. How about you?
Sure. I think that's just the human response to these unusual circumstances. But I think it's something we've got to take in stride.
Tell me a little bit about where we are. It seems like the legislature is in limbo. You've got the Senate, I believe, in adjournment. The House is not. The governor's order, the shutdown order, ends at 12:01 tomorrow morning. Does this mean now that lawmakers are going to return to Phoenix next week? What's the plan?
Yeah, that's a good question. What's the plan? Even as a member, I don't know the plan. The speaker hasn't been really open with his communications. So the Senate moved to tell the House they were ready to adjourn sine die, meaning the Constitution doesn't allow one House, the Senate or the House, to adjourn without the consent of the other for more than 3 days. So sine die means we're done for the regular session. And the Senate basically moved to tell the House they were ready. They recessed, and they are waiting for us to return our motion that we are also ready. And then both houses can sine die for the regular session. So the House hasn't done that. The House has not given the Senate the message that we're also ready. So we are in limbo, absolutely limbo, yes.
Well, could you go back, do you think, or what?
The Senate president has indicated when she took the vote on the motion to notify the House that they were ready to close the regular session sine die, that possibly she would entertain a bill or two. She limited it to just one or two bills before then sine dying the regular session. Our caucus pretty much agrees with the supermajority of senators that voted to sine die that we need to run towards the COVID battle and drop everything else, We need to stop working on anything that is not COVID-related. So we agree that we should sign it either regular session and immediately come back into special session to deal with what the citizens of Arizona, the people, small businesses need to address this crisis.
Boy, I would agree. I'd agree with that one. Come on in here, Tim.
Thank you. Yeah, I think for people who don't get the legislature, that might be a little confusing. Why would you need to sine die, i.e. close the regular session, in order to act on the most pressing issue of the day, the pandemic and the economic repercussions?
The purpose, Tim, of sine die would be so that all the other pieces of legislation that have nothing to do with this crisis would simply go away. And my concern is that if we go back into regular session and start to craft policy, we would have to do it outside of regular order, meaning there would be no committee hearings, there would be no public input. I'm willing to do that for legislation that has aimed at or geared at lessening the pain of small businesses and people during the crisis. I'm not willing to forego regular order on any piece of legislation that is not geared towards this crisis. So that's why I believe sine die is best. All those other non-COVID related policy changes would go away and we would start fresh and we could focus on things that dealt with the crisis only. We could have unique committee settings, which would possibly look very different. But again, outside of regular order, I personally don't think we should be doing anything that is not geared toward the crisis.
Tim, do you have a follow-up before I...
Sure, yeah. So what would you like to do then, assuming that a special session is called into order, what would be your top priorities?
Oh, there are things that we could do, like identifying the unemployment insurance shortfall, what could we do to help DES expedite getting money out to people. There's a lot of talk about what do small businesses need to get them through this crisis. There's sick leave issues. Should state employees all have 2 weeks of sick leave just in case they get exposed and need to quarantine themselves? What other public safety issues need to be addressed? So I think there's a lot of things that we can look at, and I tend to categorize them into three areas. Policies that address the acute need, the acute changes that need to happen to ease suffering. Then we would, once we address those and identify those and move on those could be done outside of regular order. We could waive rules to move them through quickly. Then we need to start thinking about what do we need to do in the recovery phase, the reparative phase, as we're moving out of the crisis. Things like we talked briefly about property tax fees and being waived, things like that. If you couldn't pay on time, then maybe we could do something about easing the fees for that. Credit scores, people's credit scores might be suffering during this crisis. There's something we can do to help to ease that discomfort as we move out. And then the third phase that I'm thinking about is in prevention. Like, what can we do once we're fully out of this? What can we do to prevent some of the mistakes that were made this time, particularly with personal protective equipment? Can we create some sort of centralized supply acquisition and distribution committee that would consist of people from DOA as well as private sector who specialize in supply? And if we have another health emergency like this, already have something ready to go where they would be the centralized purchasers and distributors, and we wouldn't have the price fluctuations and the market problems that we get when you have many people trying to buy the same thing. So I think of it in those three phases.
Two of your colleagues, Representative Fincham, Republican Representative Roberts, another Republican, and then there's Senator Leach coming out, again, another Republican, coming out today saying that urging the Attorney General to investigate Pima County Board of Supervisors in their proclamation that was passed on Wednesday concerning new regulations on businesses attempting to reopen after being shut down because of COVID-19. Do you have any reaction to that? Do you think that the county took the right action there, Dr. Freeze?
Well, I'm a strong believer in of local control, and I do believe that, you know, we do have our economy to consider, but we also have public health and personal safety to consider. And I think that the Pima County Board of Supervisors has the authority and has the elected authority and has, you know, the concerns of public health and citizens in mind when they put those extra restrictions on. And I believe in local control. I'm disappointed that the LD-11 team has decided to use 1487 to challenge that. But, you know, in one way they were touting, you know, in their support of doing this, they're touting the executive power that the governor has. And in another breath, they're complaining about his executive power, you know, and talking about doing a resolution to remove the emergency without his consent. So it's kind of confusing, you know, to have both of those arguments being made for different issues. But
these same legislators are making both of those arguments?
You know, I don't know where all three of them stand. I know that two of them at least sort of belong to the caucus in the House that were highly critical of the governor's ongoing when he extended it from May 1st to May 15th. I know that Representative Townsend was very strongly talking about or very frequently talking about the resolution. And I know that Mr. Fincham and Mr. Roberts were also in agreement with her and the others that wanted to stay and not sign and die. I haven't seen exactly where they stand on the resolution.
And I want to follow up on this, just Dr. Freeze. Do you think the governor should have extended the order until, say, June 1st? Do you think this was a bit hasty?
I do believe that we are going to see continued COVID cases as we open up. I wish we had a little bit more guidance for small businesses, a little bit more enforcement of any infractions against the guidance. I've seen patios full of people. I really wish we could do more to help ensure that social distancing is practiced. I wish we could have asked for floor plans in restaurants to be submitted and approved. Sanitation plans. I wish a little bit more sort of smaller steps instead of the leaps that we've taken. Certainly it's time to consider reopening, but I think that we've taken some giant leaps where I'd rather have seen some smaller steps first.
Tim, did you want to follow up on get Dr. Freeze's opinion on the numbers, the corona numbers?
Yeah, well, if I may just follow up on that first. I personally have been a little confused, maybe confused isn't the right word, but bewildered by the way it seems like the governor has kind of tacked back and forth, being at one point, you know, at the beginning, very cautious in doing much about the epidemic response, and then being pretty strong, and then getting some pushback when he extended the shutdown, and then tacking the other direction. Do you see it the same way? Do you see him responding to a kind of political wins in the way he's handling this, or do you think he's more or less handled it right? What do you think about that?
Well, I don't think he's been consistent. I do agree with you. I've seen this sort of back and forth on his response. I do believe that he came out a little bit late with the stay-at-home order initially, but very pleased to see it when he came out with it, like, was it March 30th or something? And then when the initial extension was announced, initially around, April 29th or 30th, he extended to May 15th, and he started talking about the curbside retail opening and some small steps towards getting the economy open again. I felt that that was quite reasonable. And then within a day or two on the heels of President Trump's visit that following Monday, things got accelerated. I think he probably did succumb to some pressure there, political pressure, as well as wanting to get in the good graces of the president who is preparing a visit. So I felt that acceleration just a day or two after a manageable plan was produced, suddenly it was accelerated without much data. I do believe that the pointing towards, so the federal government, of course, put out the gating criteria, and the pointing towards the decrease of the proportion of positive tests was a little bit deceiving because the testing blitz mixed antibody testing with PCR viral load testing. It also changed the population of people being tested, right? Before the testing blitz, we were mostly testing people at higher risk for exposure and symptoms, and so there have largely would be a larger number proportion of the tests positive. And then when you just introduce the general population, hey, anybody can go get a test, you're expecting that number to be smaller, the proportion of positive tests should be smaller. And for the governor to point to that and say, look, it's going down, it's okay to open, they should have a little bit more transparent about that and said, we expect it to go down. Maybe we should do, you know, look at this a little bit more closely. So there were some problems there, I would agree.
All right, let's pause right here and pick up on some of that, Tim Steller and Dr. Fries. But right now I want to tell people about Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringles. Mona is open. They're open right now, northeast corner Swan and Sunrise. They have plenty of room for their patio, and they're doing very well with that. And, of course, they're maintaining social distancing at Mona's, and they have those bakery goods are wonderful, believe me. Open right now for lunch. They open at 6:30 in the morning, close at 2 in the afternoon. Check it out. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. Also a link at BuckmasterShow.com to the website. Stop by Mona's this weekend, or stop by if you're in the area right now and have lunch. You can take your bakery goods to go or eat them outside on the patio. We'll break right here. More with Dr. Randy Fries right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026, and the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
It's easy being green. Promote wind, install solar, drive electric cars, ban mining. Wait a minute! You can't ban mining! Green is good, but hey, no can do without the metals green products need from mining. If you ban mining, you'll ban everything green. And today's minds are on board, researching technologies that provide critical materials for a greener world. Being green, another miracle from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
This is Bill Buckmaster encouraging you to fly from Tucson International Airport. When you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. A new study shows the Tucson Airport Authority's annual economic impact is $7.4 billion, with almost $1 billion of that from visitors flying into the airport. Fly Tucson, and airlines will respond with more flights, bringing more visitors, benefiting all of us. Type in TUS when you book your next flight and fly Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our Friday Focus interview today on the live line, Dr. Randy Freese, the Assistant Minority Leader of the Arizona House of Representatives. And of course, Dr. Freese, part of the UA College of Medicine Trauma Team, Professor of Surgery and Associate Medical Director. Tim Steller also with us on the live line. I want to pick up, gentlemen, about the testing. We have the antibody test, Dr. Freese, to show if you've had the CV, and then you have a test to determine whether or not you currently have the infection. Did I hear you properly that what we're seeing when it shows about number of positive cases, that we are commingling these two tests together? Is that what I heard you say?
Yeah, that was my understanding from when the testing blitz started and the data that was coming in after the testing blitz through the DHS website, talking about the proportion of test positive was putting together the antibodies as well as the viral antigen PCR testing. So, you know, it's a little confusing when you're mixing data like that from, number one, it's from two different populations of people. Before the blitz, we were testing mostly those that were a higher risk of being positive. And then after the blitz, if you test the general population, you expect to see a downtrend in the proportion of positive tests. And then mingling the PCR with the antibodies, I just don't think they should be mingled and then use that data to make decisions on opening up.
Tim Steller, you want to jump in here on this?
So which would you prefer then? Would you prefer that we simply follow the raw confirmed case numbers in order to figure out how we're doing with the epidemic?
No, I think using the proportion of positives is reasonable, but you should continue to look at a single population, or you should continue to look at a single test. Like, let's test the, you know, when you broaden the population and suddenly start testing a whole lot more people that are lower risk, you expect to see the downtrend. Or if you want to use everyone, say, okay, we're going to reset our zero point, and our zero point is now going to be with the testing blitz and going forward, and not pulling in the number to compare to when you're using a higher risk population. So, you know, just be cautious about how you're dividing things and be transparent about, you know, what the data means.
At the emergency room, are you seeing, I know during March, the end of March and April, there was a dramatic drop in emergency room folks that weren't coming to the hospital if they could put it off. Is that starting now with the opening starting to pick up? I'm just curious, what are you seeing over at Banner?
Well, right. Remember, I'm not seeing the medical people. I see the surgical and trauma emergencies.
Right.
So
yes.
I can't really comment on the COVID volume. But I will say during the stay-at-home period, we did see a sort of a decrease in the trauma volume, but then there were spikes. Occasional weekends, we'd get back to normal volume, even though the stay-at-home order had been in place. So, you know, just like anything else, there's fluctuations. I think overall, our volume, at least for trauma, was a little bit lower, but we're certainly starting to see it pick back up to a normal level.
Okay, Tim Steller.
So to completely change tracks, you have been in the legislature for how many years now?
This is sixth year.
Sixth year, okay. And I don't know, different times people have talked about you running for different offices. Are you interested in any other offices other than being in the House or the Senate?
Well, you know, I stayed in the legislature. You know, Tim, I certainly looked at running for Congress more than once, and I always chose to stay in the legislature because I believe that local policymaking is actually quite, is more powerful, more meaningful to Arizonans. I am term limited. If I get reelected in 2020, that will be the last term I can serve in the House. So I will have some decisions to make. Sure, I've got, you know, I probably will run for a different office at some point. But right now, I feel very content on working locally here in this state.
Have you go ahead, Tim. Sorry. You want to follow
up? No, you go ahead, please.
Well, I was just curious. When I go out and about, it seems like it's about 50-50 folks wearing masks. What has been your experience around town, Dr. Freeze?
You know, I think initially when we started with the pandemic ramping up, I think I saw much fewer masks. And in fact, the Surgeon General was recommending not to wear
right,
masks.
Right.
And it didn't really make sense to me that masks would make it worse, because look at Asia. They've got a lot more of these viruses, or experience with the viruses, I should say, than we have. And they seem to have been able to control things better by wearing masks. And I was very pleased to see that guideline changed. And I really believe it makes a difference. I don't know if it's 50-50. I would probably say more like 75
okay.
or 60%. I think it's more than half,
okay.
but it could certainly be better.
More than half.
You know, If I may say one more thing, I wear a mask not to protect myself. I wear a mask to protect everyone around me. Because, you know, the mask really keeps me from billowing my droplets out to much farther. If I coughed or spoke loudly or yelled, my droplets are going to go to a much farther way. If I'm wearing a mask, it protects others. I wear a mask to protect others, not so much to protect myself.
Can I quickly follow up on that, Tim? And I'm just curious, if I'm wearing a mask, and am I getting any protection from COVID?
I think you are. But I think you are protecting others more from your droplets than you are protected from others, if that makes sense. I think you're getting both, but you're giving more protection to others than you're getting.
Okay, now, Tim, go ahead.
So if we all wear a mask, we're helping everyone, right? Everyone is getting help. But if only half of us wear a mask, it's not as powerful.
Okay, go ahead, Tim.
So, and the mechanism, just to be 100% clear here, is stopping the droplets, it's not as if the virus is kind of flying out on wings out of your respiratory system, but it's the droplets that are carrying it. Yeah. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Right. The droplets that happen with normal speech, the droplets that happen with if I'm yelling or shouting, then the droplets will go farther, or a cough or a sneeze would propel them even farther. So those droplets, respiratory droplets, are always there. It's just that they're laden with virus and someone who is infected.
So where are we in this from your point of view when you look at all of these numbers? Just kind of from a general point of view, do you think we are peaking at this point, maybe still a little more to go before we peak? What's your overall take, Dr. Freeze?
I think that what the state has done has really flattened the curve. People need to understand, flattening the curve doesn't mean fewer people get infected. It just means that the amount of people infected at one time is not so high that it overwhelms the healthcare capabilities, right? So you're over a period of time, the same number of people get infected. It just takes longer, and that surge is not realized. So I think that we have the things that the governor did and proposed have helped. I think that we're going to probably see a spike now that we're opening up again. The question is, how big will the spike be? If we open up too quickly, if we open up without proper guidance and steps and enforcement of those steps, we're going to see a bigger spike. So I wish we had more guidelines, very, very and enforceable guidelines, like, you know, submit a floor plan for your restaurant to your city council so they can approve it and say, yes, this fits what the CDC is recommending. Submit a plan for sanitizing your business. Submit a plan for, you know, how you're going to keep your retail working with people adhering to these guidelines. What are you going to do for your employees? How are you going to protect them and screen them? I would like to have seen a little bit more in preparation and more of a stepwise opening up rather than the leaps that we're taking now.
Tim, do you have a final question?
Yeah, so I'm happy that you have estimated that more than half the people are wearing masks. I am concerned, and I wonder if you are too, that the leadership of the state and the country for sure have given mixed messages about what to do next. In other words, I feel like, and I'm wondering if you do too, that there's a large portion of the population that is just trying to return to normal without taking many precautions. I've asked you a lot of questions here, but do we need more heavy-handed enforcement in order to ensure people take it seriously? Or how do we ensure that there's not just a kind of aloofness or laissez-faire attitude that takes hold?
Yeah, I agree with you, Tim. We are not out from under the shadow of this virus, and we need that message to be very clear from our leadership. We need people. That's why I wish we had more guidelines that were brought from DHS to businesses. This is if you have a restaurant, how you should ensure these things, the CDC guidelines are followed with social distancing and sanitizing and things like that. More guidelines for retail, more guidelines for other service businesses that might actually require people to go into the homes people. But yeah, and more modeling from the leaders. More, I mean, Governor Ducey should wear a mask every time he's out in public, every time he's in a room with, a number of people who are then going to go off and be with more people. I mean, we should be modeling the type of behavior that we think should be carried out by citizens, and modeling the type of behavior that carries the message that this virus is not gone. We are going to be under the shadow of this virus for quite some time. If we're not careful, we're going to be back to another stay-at-home order this summer or in the fall.
All right. This always happens. We run out of time, but then I think of another question. So I'm going to it's my show, so I'm going to try to work it in here, and we'll work it in. I'm just curious, Dr. Freese, we had heard that perhaps the sun and the hot temperatures here in Arizona would make a difference. But from what we're seeing, is there any indication that's happening in Arizona?
No, if you look at the data, right, most people that are getting this virus are getting it from indoors, right? They're getting it in their workplace, in a restaurant, in a retail space. It's very less transmissible outdoors. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily because of the heat or the sunlight. It's just because of the activities, movement, and how those droplets travel. They're going to be around longer inside. You're more likely to touch something and then touch your face. So I think this heat and sunlight is a false narrative. It's indoors that we're going to continue to have transmission, still just like we do now. So
getting outside in the sun and doing safe distancing certainly is good for you.
It should give you some protection from transmission, right? You're more likely to get the virus indoors in a social situation than outdoors.
All right, Dr. Randy Freese, thank you very much. We'll see what happens, whether you and your colleagues go up to Phoenix for a special session. I, for one, hope so. We'll see what happens there. Thank you, Dr. Freese.
Thank you, Bill. My pleasure.
All right. Dr. Randy Freese with us on the Buckmaster Show. He is the assistant minority leader in the Arizona House of Representatives. I've got a few questions for Tim Steller. He'll stick around on the live line. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined, because without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. These Buckmaster Show hours go so fast. I could have spent a couple of hours with Dr. Randy Fries. I have so many questions, Tim Steller, about, you know, the particular kinds of masks people are wearing. And I know everybody gets into it on Facebook. Some don't find it necessary. Others think that a particular mask doesn't do any good. I mean, on and on it goes. One thing, Tim, there are people that I know, actually, who have not interfaced with another human being for 2 months now.
That is hard.
Yeah. And there, I think what we can, what several things are emerging out of this. One of them is how fast Arizona will see a recovery with the economy depends on people's comfort level. I don't know what the percentage is. Maybe it's one in three people that will perhaps be super cautious and want to see some kind of a vaccine. And that may not, you know, I hope that will come by the end of the year or early next year, but it may not. Would you agree with me about this comfort level?
Well, I mean, I don't know what the correct proportions are, although I would say what you just mentioned comports with what the governor mentioned when he announced he was extending the stay home order. He said, you know, someone had told him that the rough proportions were 30% of people want to go out now, 40% are kind of, and another 30% were not going to go out until there was a vaccine, and 40% were just kind of waiting for more information. And you know, I think you guys are more or less roughly right, and you're right that people, that we can't, you know, resume normal economic activity until people are more comfortable going out, which, in my opinion, is an argument for wearing face coverings, because let's not forget, as Dr. Fries said, when you wear a face covering, you're protecting someone else much more than you are yourself from your own droplets of saliva or water or whatever. That's what we're doing. And if, so if, let's say, 40 to 50% of the population isn't wearing a face covering, then those people who are concerned about contracting the virus, perhaps because they're vulnerable, they won't be going out because and spending money and helping, you know, restart the economy because they're worried about this large proportion of people who's not protecting them.
So that I think this comfort level is going to be is a huge issue. And some of these people, again, are not comfortable right now. Perhaps they decide they're going to wait. We've had some very well-known restaurants, Tim Steller, Janos, Wilder, and a group of others have said they don't feel the time is right. What's your take on that?
Well, the really interesting thing about that for me is that, as the governor mentioned in one of his press conferences, you can't open at a minimal level and expect to make money. You know, you're probably digging the hole deeper if you are only allowing, as he said, you know, 25% of your capacity in. So I can understand the kind of either-or thinking of not wanting to open at a minimized level, because it's costing money when you do that. Not to mention, there's the question of how you can protect your employees and your customers. It's a real dilemma.
Do you have anything coming up you'd like to tell the listeners about, any of your columns coming up this weekend?
Well, we've been talking about it. I have a couple different ideas floating, but the one I'm going with relates to masks. And I've been really interested in this issue and how it's become, I think, unnecessarily politicized. You know, there are various arguments floating around against wearing face coverings in public. Most of them are bogus, in my opinion. Because, for example, people say that the virus is so small it can fit right through any cotton face covering. And that may be true, but the virus isn't, as I said, on wings, you know, trying to fly out of your mouth. It catches a ride on water droplets or saliva droplets. And so any covering can catch water or saliva droplets. So there are groups of people that can't wear masks or shouldn't, you know, if they have trouble breathing, for example. I mean, it can over time inhibit your breathing. So it's not that there are no good arguments for not wearing a mask, or no good arguments against wearing a mask. It's that there are very few good arguments. And generally speaking, wearing a mask or a face covering is helpful to some degree to protect other people. And that's the argument I plan on making this Sunday.
You saw the article in the Arizona Republic about the Republicans going after Mark Kelly about connections to China. Mark was one of the founders of Worldview, one of the co-founders.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be a line of attack on every single, it's a coordinated attack the GOP has put together. They've decided to make China the kind of boogeyman of the year. And so any connection any individual Democrat has with China will be attacked and exploited. That's not to say that there's never a legitimate complaint. And I personally haven't made up my mind about this Mark Kelly attack. But I think generally what we're talking about when we're talking about the Blame China campaign is blame China, and then in parentheses, or else Donald Trump will get the blame. Because somebody's to blame for us having this pandemic come to the United States. And if it's not China, then the blame's going to settle on the U.S. Administration, which I think deserves a good portion of the blame. So, you know, people have an investment in needing to blame China for everything. And certainly it's been a poll tested attack line. So I don't know. I think, you know, people, it's fine to get investments from China. You know, we were interconnected. We have been interconnected for years and years since Nixon, you know, and I don't know. I just don't think every connection to China should be attacked as if it's a problem. It's mostly an excuse, in my opinion, for what we did wrong in handling the pandemic as it approached.
We did have a caller who was concerned that some people do need oxygen and perhaps they would not be. And I think you did mention, Tim, that there are some people that can't wear masks for
perhaps
medical reasons.
Yeah, there's various reasons. And people with really bad anxiety, people on the autism spectrum, various other disabilities. I mean, but in many cases, those are people who should be avoiding public interactions anyway, especially the people with immune deficiencies or respiratory issues. They shouldn't be out anyway. So if their first problem isn't wearing a mask, their first problem is being out.
And again, I've only got a few seconds, and I always do this. I give you a big question, and there's not much time. It's about these numbers. Generally, I know we talked with Dr. Freeze. He does. I gathered he doesn't really think we've hit a peak. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking at him as we talked. I mean, it's clear. I'm looking at the rolling average in Arizona, and you know, it is more like a plateau or a kind of a rolling plateau where we have, new deaths. The percent in new deaths, the percent growth in new deaths today was 4.33%. So we're continuing to have a steady spread of the virus and the epidemic, not a spike, but it takes a couple of weeks or more for a spike that has already happened to show up in the numbers. So the problem is by the time we realize we've had a problem, we're already deep into it and have to take drastic measures to rein it back in.
All right. Well, everybody, please stay safe. And that includes you, of course, Tim Steller. Thanks, Tim, for joining us today.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. Matt Russell, our longtime weekend watch host, off today. He certainly deserves a day off, but we have Dan Gibson going to fill in for Matt with Weekend Watch right after this.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know about my love of travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. I know you value your time and money, so it makes sense to fly Tucson with nearly 60 daily nonstop flights to major hub airports. If you're flying to another airport to take a nonstop flight, you're still making a connection and spending 4 hours on the road traveling to that other airport. That's why I fly Tucson and encourage you to do the same.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-7000. 6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Oh, Ryan, I don't know about you, but I am ready for the weekend. And when I hear that Stir It Up, I'm really ready. That means weekend watch on the Buckmaster Show, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, who are ready when you are to welcome you with open arms. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson to a lovely area of the southwest corner of the Land of Enchantment. Visit southwestnewmexico.org. There you will see all sorts of ideas, like visiting the Gila Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Many of these activities are outdoors, so much social distancing in the area, so you'll have plenty of room over there. Great places to stay as well. Let's welcome now Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson, who always does a fine job filling in for Matt Russell. Matt's taken the day off from his chores on Weekend Watch. How are you, Mr. Gibson?
I'm okay, and as I have to remind you, it is my segment. Matt fills in for me. That's what's happening.
I think that might be a good way to put it. How are you doing? We've got a lot of restaurants reopening. Do you have some weekend watch tips for us to jumpstart our weekend?
Sure. It's a little bit of everything out there right now. So, I mean, my main tip to people is if you're thinking of a restaurant, you're thinking about dining in, call ahead, just make sure what the rules are there. There is certainly a mix here as places open up and their general comfort level, like the Charo restaurants they have a 100-point plan that they're working their way through until they feel prepared. But other places, they're open now. They're doing distance serving, things like that. One of the things I was welcomed, made me very happy, was that Tito and Pep, one of my absolute favorite Tucson restaurants, went back to their Tito to go plan. They're still only doing takeout, but their takeout is absolutely incredible. If you have not been to Tito and Pep, this is still an excellent opportunity to do so. They have great dishes, including their whole pollo asado, which sells out early, so make sure you call ahead. Tortas, a mesquite roasted pork shoulder. They also have a number of dishes that are take and bake, so you can bring those home and heat them to your leisure, including their queso fundido, which I think I might just order five of just right now. After I get off this call, I'm going to order five of those. That's dinner, just queso fundido.
Well, we were talking about comfort level, the consumer comfort level, and that's really what it's about right now, Dan. A lot of people are doing the patio dining. You know, they can be outdoors, as we heard with Dr. Freeze, our interview today, that being outdoors is a good thing. So, yeah, patio dining is something, and the weather is still really good for that right now.
I know, and it's interesting because they're looking at some sort of, the city and the county are looking at opportunities to sort of do extension of premises to let people expand their spaces. That's happening in a lot of cities. That's something I'm totally pro personally. I think there's still some good evenings out there in Tucson that we can open up the spaces and give people a little more distance and room, and the outdoors are a nice place for patio dining in the summer. Still spectacular in the city, for my money at least.
All right, another weekend watch tip for us.
Well, here's one, another one, just on the home front. You know, just in case you're thinking about it, find people at El Charo. I mentioned them earlier. They're opening their in dining later, but they've also opened up a new thing called the Tamale of the Month Club. Everyone has friends and family that could use some tamales in their life. These are tough times. I mean, if a box of tamales showed up at your door, who wouldn't be happy about that? You can get a 12-pack. You can get a 24-pack. You can have a subscription every month to tamales showing up at your door. It's a great deal, and they're all made, you know, with the great Carlotta Flores recipes in their FDA-certified building. Great prices, too, actually. Really shockingly affordable. Tamale of the Month Club. This is the sort of innovation the city needs, and thanks to the Flores family for doing it.
All right, one more, Dan Gibson.
Still, this is a little offbeat, too, because people are still feeling a little uncomfortable finding this space. My recommendation, I got the Taste of Tucson Sonoran-style Recipes cookbook from Jackie Alpers the other day, not just because it thanks me in the back, which is something all cookbook authors should do, but it is a really spectacular recipe book. You can get it on Amazon. You can get it from Antigone Books and others. It has 80 original recipes, mostly from Tucson, local Tucson chefs. There's a El Huerto Canelo recipe from Daniel Contreras, Susana de Villa, Cafe Pocacosa, Travis Peters at the Parish, Maria Maison at Boca. So if you want to learn how to make a lot of the dishes that you love eating around town, you want to make them at home, impress your friends and family, Taste of Tucson from Jackie Alpers. It is a beautiful book, lots of great recipes, and highly recommended.
Thank you.
The Dan Gibson seal of approval.
There you go. Dan Gibson, the best to you and yours and your family. Stay safe, okay?
You too.
Thanks a lot. Dan Gibson of Visit Tucson. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. A big thanks to John Couch. John, thanks for your service today and a couple of other times this week. Always making sure that we sound good in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. On behalf of everybody here at Bustos Media in Tucson, we hope you do have a very healthy, safe, and a fun weekend. Back with you Monday.